glad to be here today and to have the opportunity to speak to so many of you here, and I'm very encouraged to see so many people here that are concerned about our kids and this aspect of their education. In September, I attended my daughter's Baptist school night at Westland Middle School in Bethesda. We went from classroom to classroom to hear what our children would be learning with each subject and how we could reinforce that learning at home. In the health class, we sat on weight machines while the teacher explained to us the topics that would be covered in the class. I was surprised that there was no mention of sex education. After the class, I stayed to ask the teacher about the curriculum. He acknowledged that there would indeed be a unit on sex. He described the curriculum as being pretty tame. I asked if the students were allowed to opt out. He said to me, "You can, but I don't really think it's the best choice for your kid." Then he added, "I have three kids myself. I wouldn't take her out if I were you. It's hard to be different from the other kids in junior high. She might be made fun of." This attitude of complacency and compliance is a great concern to me as I learned about the new curriculum recently adopted. It does not reflect the values taught in my home. It doesn't reflect the decisions being made by many of our fine children to maintain wholesome values. My young daughter has tried to take a stand for decency among her peers. She, along with many of her friends, is making choices to avoid music and television programs containing even marginally destructive values. She tries to dress modestly. She's beginning to identify in her young life that there is a difference between right and wrong, and that when she makes correct choices, she feels good. We have to send her to school where she will learn how to put on a condom that's both offensive and destructive to her standards, to encourage her and her little friends at this naive stage in their lives to discover their sexual identities is inappropriate, to teach her that sex play is normal among young adults is an affront to her beliefs. The statement is made that any child can opt out of this curriculum. However, it seems wrong that children are spending hours in the library each year because of what is, or that they may have to spend hours in the library each year because what is being taught goes against their personal value system. It seems more like punishment than option. Teaching children about sex, but that also teaching the consequence of choice, is like teaching kindergartners how to light matches, and then avoiding any discussion that the harm that fire can do. Moral scars and emotional damage can be permanent. There is an appropriate time and place for dispersing this type of information. There is much information that can be confusing and harmful to children. Sexuality is difficult to teach without a bias. Topics addressed in this new curriculum are so personal, they need to be spoken up with sensitivity and respect by parents that are concerned and can explain consequence. The needs of each individual child should be considered. So much of our children's future is contingent on the choices they make now. These are my feelings as a mother. They are shared by many of the other mothers I have discussed these concerns with. I am not naive to the social problems we are now facing. I know that an alarming percentage of our youth are participating in risky sexual behavior. I know that many feel this curriculum is the answer to these problems. I respect that there are differences of opinion. I ask the board, can't we offer this instruction somewhere outside of regular classroom instruction? Is it right to teach concepts that go against so many parents' and students' fundamental beliefs? Do you want to put religious families in a position where they feel they cannot, in good conscience, send their children to public school?
That's
right. Today on what I believe is the most effective way to protect our youth. strengthening our families.
Yes. Yes.
Children are our greatest resource. The most important work we can do is to influence for good the lives of our children. In no other setting will we have the opportunity to have such a profound effect on the life of another human being. It is a difficult time to raise children. All around them are harmful influences. There are those with self-serving motives who try to expose our children to addictive influences in every medium. Parents must monitor television viewing, computer use, literature, music, and friends in an effort to raise happy children, free from the harm of pornography, sex, and violence. No matter how the storm rages outside, we can provide a safe place for our kids in our home. We must build our family for good on our children. Love within the family gives comfort, courage, and strength. We can express to our children our love to our children by spending time with them, focusing on their strengths, teaching them truth, demonstrating affection, and building our marriages. Strengthening our families is also personally rewarding. Mother Teresa said, "Works of love are works of joy." We don't need to look for happiness. If we have love for others, we will be given it. Our time is the currency of love. To a child, it is a commodity of real value, a tangible evidence of love. We truly give our children everything when we give them our time. To a child, quality time is also quantity time. Parents are busy, perhaps stressed and stretched more than any previous generation. Perhaps this is the reason our time is the most valuable currency of love. Time invested in our kids yields rich dividends. We need to devote more energy to having fun with our children, working with them, and teaching them. We can express love and create strength through gratitude. We need to notice the things that our children do right. We can choose to see the good. This is more motivating than correcting every wrong. It is important to hug and kiss our children. Research shows that young women who have been deprived of physical affection from their parents, particularly their fathers, often resort to premarital sex in order to build physical acceptance and affection. It is equally important that our sons receive hugs and kisses. As a teenager, I loved to visit my grandmother. She always met me at the door and surrounded us with warm, soft hugs. I had no doubt she loved me. Looking back, I think I would have made a 2.5-hour trip to her home just for those hugs. We also build our families and express love by establishing firm but fair boundaries. Rules can be created with children's input but must be reinforced by parents. Considerable research over the years has demonstrated that young people who grow up in homes without rules or guiding principles and who are not held accountable fail to learn to control their behavior. As children reach their teenage years, friends become more important in their life. This isn't to say that parents can't still have considerable influence on them by guiding them in their choice of friends. We should teach our children how to make friends and then encourage friendships with those that share their values. We can make their friends feel comfortable in our home. We can help children select good friends by encouraging them to participate in groups, organizations, and activities that involve them with other good kids. Expressions of love between husband and wife are also important expressions of love for children. Every loving word, act of kindness, and gesture of affection between husband and wife contributes to a child's sense of security and love in the home. All families fall short of the ideal. Behavior at times is less than perfect. What matters most is willingness to admit mistakes and strive for something better every day. We need to recognize our efforts for what they are. Building a stronger family makes stronger kids, and that makes a stronger nation. This is the answer. Let us commit to giving them more of the things that will truly help them. Let us stand together in protection of our children.
Yes.